Blog Talk Radio.
Yvonne Mason, and as y'all know, I normally do a piece of shameless promotion, but tonight I didn't, and the reason I didn't is because that beautiful voice is my guest, Arthur Ramirian Dimitri, and she is doing a piece of shameless promotion for one of her new books, which we'll get into in a little bit, so y'all just keep your shirts on and come take a ride with us and learn things. You know, I always say that when I put the shows up, join us and learn things, because you never know what you're going to learn on the show. That's why we call it Off the Chain. But I have to tell you, before we get started, y'all know I'm a numbers person. I love my numbers because my numbers tell me how well my authors are doing and my musicians are doing and my entrepreneurs are doing and my artists are doing. And because we are heard in over 50 countries, ladies and gentlemen, and I do mean over 50 countries, and every day it grows. And because when I started this show last July the 27th, I thought, well, if I get 5,000 listeners, I'll be a happy camper. I never thought for one minute that I would have shows booked 4 months in advance, that I'm booking shows so fast I can hardly keep up with them. In fact, I have to book some more for August that I have to rebook. And I never dreamed that this show would take on a life of its own. And it's all because of my guests, who keep coming back and keep feeding this show and keep feeding me and keep bringing their energy to the show. This morning when I ran the numbers just on Blog Talk, not the other six podcasts, just Blog Talk, we're at 5,892 listeners just on this show. By the middle of next week, I fully believe, if not by the weekend, that we will be at 6,000 listeners just on this show. Overall, with all the podcasts that I put this show up on, and including this show, we are at 13,395 listeners. Now, ladies and gentlemen, I wanted 15,000 by the end of the year. That was my goal overall with all the podcast and the show. I was pushing for 15,000. Well, it looks to me like we're only 1,300 shy of 15,000. So I should get that easy by, I'm going to say, the end of May, because July 27th is the year of the show. So when we get to the 15,000, we're going to make it 20,000. Simply because this is a free platform for anyone who has a dream and is willing to share it, do it, achieve it. Because y'all all know how I feel about dreamers. So what are you waiting for? If you want to be on the show, contact me at offthechainradio@yahoo.com. I don't care if you got a platform, if you have a book, if you have music, if you have artwork, if you have a business, or if you just want to chat because you have something on your mind. That's what this show is about. That's why we call it Off the Chain. So that being said, our guest tonight, I've had her booked for months, and she's just as cute as a bug in a rug, and I am so excited to have her on the show. It's author Ramirian Dimitri, and the name just rolls off the tongue. You can't forget it if you try. She is an author and a creative force. She is a story crafter who is into black coffee, already won my heart over because I drink black coffee, and traveling abroad, which I love to do too. When her characters come home in some sort of trouble, Dimitri swears she didn't invent it. Mm-hmm. It was her evil twin. Yeah, okay. Pulling from her Bachelor of Arts in English and Psychology, her debut series, The Supernatural London Underground, is a blend of fantasy, grounded in reality, and a world readers can truly escape to. As an eccentric, see, another woman after my own heart, and reader, she still enjoys creating the alternate reality in her urban fantasy series more than anything, and her interactive world awaits for you at romarindimitri.com. No, you can't go there now. You have to listen to the show. Then you can go later. Welcome, my dear. How are you tonight?
Hello, I am wonderful. How are you?
I am excited. It has been an interesting day, and I know that you're excited.
Oh, absolutely.
So, before the show, we were talking about many things, as we're prone to do when I have guests on my show. But before we talk about the particular things that we got into before the computer said you're going to go live in 5 minutes, did you tell our readers your? Did you always want to write like you write, or did you have your past someplace else and you just came into this? What brought you to this place?
I know that I always wanted to write, and I've always known. And I was one of those kids who was making books as soon as I could write. I remember my first chapter book, I only got about a paragraph in, and that was chapter one. So that was many years ago. And then when I entered college, I decided I wanted to major in English to write. And I knew what the odds were, but I knew that I wanted to do it anyway. And I ended up adding psychology to it. So I always knew, and I've kind of followed that path. I've also had a lot of hobbies and a lot of ways to express myself, and I'm trying to enjoy life. Even now, writing, I'm trying to combine all my passion into this series. And I have a lot of books in store for readers, and I'm meeting new readers every day. So that is fantastic.
Well, you didn't. When we connected, I couldn't find where you live. I didn't think you lived in England, because calling me long distance from England would be like robbing Fort Knox, and I'm thinking, no, she doesn't live in England. She writes about England, but she doesn't live in England. So you either live in Canada or the States somewhere.
I do. I like to visit England. I've been twice, but I am from Ohio. So I am just the northeast of the United States. We're pretty, I think where I live, I mean, it's just pretty normal. There's really nothing too crazy going on here. I'm halfway in between Cleveland and Akron in a suburb. So halfway in between Cleveland and where LeBron James grew up.
My publisher and my best girlfriend lived in Ohio. She lives down here now in sunny Florida, but she's from Ohio. Her mother and sister still live up there. So, yeah, I'm saying I know Dimitri does not live in England, but
no.
You write like you're very familiar with England. And ladies and gentlemen, on her website, she did something that I just found absolutely amazing. She gives pointers on things to do, how to travel, what not to do, and various and sundry things. So you must have spent quite a few days, weeks or so over there.
I was fortunate enough to go twice. I went once in the beginning of college with one of my friends, and after we came back, she met a man. She happened to meet him online, and she ended up marrying an English man and moving there. So I had the pleasure of being able to go to her wedding. I just kind of dropped everything, and I said, I'm going. I have to go see Eric and James get married. So that was the second time, and I took my then-boyfriend, who I ended up marrying, so we got to take a nice trip through England, too. So that was when I got to experience it in two different ways, but I do like to travel with other people, and I think that makes a lot of fun memories.
And not only that, but it also gives you fodder for your books, because had you not traveled, trains, subways, you wouldn't have had the mindset to write your series.
There are definitely a lot of things that are inside jokes, so my friends that I traveled with will realize the settings and things like that. And I think as a writer, that's the most important thing. Or if you're stuck on something, you have to go to the place that inspired you. And sitting in the setting and taking notes while you're there really helps the creative process flow, and I think you're really true to yourself and your characters, and the readers especially, when you can share those specific details of travel.
Oh, I agree. I certainly agree, because I am a proponent. In fact, when young writers come to me and say, I want to write, how do I start? And the first thing I tell them is, number one, is this something that you cannot live without doing? Number two, are you ready to make the sacrifices? And number three, start out by writing what you know.
Oh, that's wonderful advice. That is great.
Because what happens is readers are so educated now, as opposed to years ago when people didn't travel much and you didn't have the internet and you didn't have television and people had to rely on someone else's imagination or firsthand experience to build a setting. But now people are so traveled and so educated, if you can't make that story credible, then you're blowing your brand.
Yes, I agree. I don't think I'd be able to write this story had I not went to London. I don't think it would have happened, and I don't want to think about how it would have ended up if I didn't.
It would have been a setting in Ohio, maybe. Who knows?
Yes. Oh, that would have been great. I have yet to write a novel in Ohio, but I have great inspiration when I look out the window. So maybe someday.
It could happen. You go to some remote area, because there's still a lot of remote areas up there, and with the conversation you and I had earlier, anything could happen. I mean, even the doll you said you were sitting next to that has a mind of her own, that would be a great story.
Yes, I have a doll right now, so you can picture this. She is from Germany, so she has a little plaited braid. She's blonde, and she has a hat and a dress, and she used to sit on the back of my grandparents' couch, and I ended up taking her home after they died. And when I come into, I have my spare bedroom's kind of like my office. I keep all my stuff in there, and my husband doesn't really go in it. And when I go back in the room after being outside of the room, this doll will move or her hat will be off. And I think she's pretty friendly. I mean, she's not up to no good. She's just a cute little doll. So sometimes it's kind of nice to have that reminder, definitely, of my grandparents. But it's very strange, all in the same.
Well, she's just letting you know, you left me, so I'm going to be a petulant child and do something to remind you that I am still here. Watch me.
She said, come in the office and write.
Exactly. See, she's your disciplinarian.
That's fantastic. She's very cute, so hopefully I always think of her that way and she doesn't move.
There you go. So let me back up just a little bit before we get into the brand, to get into you. How, when you got your BA in English and psychology, how do you feel that helped you when you decided that you were going to put yourself out there? And the reason I ask that is, you would not believe the writers and authors that I talk to that say, well, I was really, really scared because I didn't think anybody would like it, and I'm really nervous about putting myself out there. And my comeback to them is, well, you know what? then you don't have a dream, because all of us have fragile egos, but we just have to suck it up, buttercup, and do it, because we cannot do it. We would go insane, and then they would put us away. So how did your degree in English and psychology help you overcome that, for lack of a better word, fragile ego?
I think English really helps build a foundation, but the best thing to do is to write. And at this point, I've written 8 full-length novels, and I'm on the 9th one. And I think putting all those words down really gives you a better feel for it. And you can have a great story and a great plot, and you use all of that great English stuff like symbolism, alliteration, all of those wonderful textbook words to really make your work flow and stand out. But the experience of writing, I think, really tops it off. So I definitely feel like I had a stronger foundation and can think through things, but the experience helps. As for psychology, too, I think it definitely added a depth to my characters, and I really think of them on that level, and I like to break down their personalities to really understand them, and they all have fears and goals and hopes. A lot of times you'll just see the hopes in some writing, which is fine, and it's not always necessary, but these people are really motivated, and sometimes they're motivated by things that are scarier, like fear, and I think that just really lends a great multidimensional character to our quality to these characters. And if you are not perfect, you're going to definitely relate to the characters that I have for you in this series.
And what you said is that last sentence especially is very important, and that none of us are perfect, and none of our work is ever going to be perfect. And we just have to go with it.
Yeah.
Because if we don't, we cheat ourselves and we cheat those people that might love our work. And to say, well, I'm afraid to put it out there. Well, some days I'm afraid to walk out my front door, but that's not going to stop me from walking out my front door. I mean, come on.
Yeah,
my anagram for
so
fear
true.
Is... It is. My anagram for fear is false evidence that appears real. And I think we convince ourselves that we're going to not do well, so what's the point in going out there and doing it, because we'll just fall on our face. Well, babies fall on their face every day when they learn to walk, but that doesn't keep them from learning to walk.
Yeah.
Would that be a fair assessment?
That would be an absolutely fair assessment. I completely agree. You just have to be willing to put yourself out there. And I know a lot of people or friends and family will read it, and you kind of wonder what they'll think and if they'll be honest with you. And you will find people who are honest with you. You have to put it out there, and that's the only way that you can grow, no matter what your background is, no matter what experiences you have. You have to take, even if it's criticism that might not necessarily be fair, you have to take that, too, into consideration. One of the authors when I was first starting out told me, now is the time to develop a thick skin. Before my first book was even out, we all know that writing is suggestive, and it's really subjective is the word that I'm looking for. But you have to find your niche. So you have to find that group of people who are really going to enjoy it, and then you can improve from there. So you'll never stop growing, and you can't be afraid of growing.
And do you find that as you grow as a writer, that the characters in your books grow with you? Because as we develop our craft, it's like anything else. In developing a craft, the more that we develop it, the more depth the writing takes on, the storyline takes on, and the characters become even more than three-dimensional. Sometimes they're 5- and 6-dimensional.
They are. I wrote the first 3 books first before I put the first book out because I knew that would happen. Even if you think back to your favorite TV show, you'll see the actors in the first episode or the pilot, and they're not so used to their character, not as much as they should be. So I didn't want to have that pilot effect, even though I know that characters open up slowly, especially the ones that I have. They're not going to reveal everything in the first chapter. But I wrote the first 3, so I had a really good understanding and a good grasp on these people. And then I went back and I edited book one.
That's an excellent idea. That is a very, very, so people take note. If you're doing, even if you're doing like a series, do like Dimitri did and maybe do the first two, three books before you publish and then go back and say, oh, I need to tweak this a little bit. I like that idea. It's perfect. So let me ask you this. You did a trailer, which is absolutely hysterical. Tell the audience about that trailer.
The trailer for my new book, I wanted to do something kind of fun and different, and I wanted a song. I'm one of those authors with playlists because I am a musician, so I like to pay attention to music, especially having characters who are in their early 20s. Music really speaks to a lot of people, and it will tell you a lot about somebody in their behavior. So it won't cause behavior, but it's a good way for people to express themselves. And so the one that I did for my third book, Wanderings of the Wicked, is in New York. So the name of my series is The Supernatural London Underground, but they do go to New York in this third book. So I have a New York subway, and then I did about a minute-long cover of Creedence Clearwater Revival's Bad Moon Rising. And so it's set to that music, and then you see the book cover materialize very slowly as a poster on the subway. And then you see a message, and then you see that when the book's coming out and the release date for it. So I try to do little creative things like that to just combine things together and think outside the box, just to do something that's short but effective to show you what the book's all about.
And that, ladies and gentlemen, is why the cover to Bad Moon Rising was our opening number tonight. See how well that just blended right in.
That was fantastic. I got so excited. I'm like, oh my gosh, here's the song. There it is.
There it is.
It's fabulous. Yes.
The trailer is just, it is absolutely a beautiful trailer. I've never seen it quite done that way before, and I loved it. That's why when I wrote down, the trailer is hysterical, because it is. Now, let me ask you this. I've been doing this for a while now. Many years, more years than I care to count. How are you handling being an indie author? And I ask that sincerely because I got rejected so many times 30 years ago that I said, watch this, and took my own destiny and said, I'm making it mine, I'm owning it, and I've never looked back. I don't ever want to be anything but an indie author, and I became an indie author at a time when indie authors were not very well respected. Oh, you're an indie author. Well, you're not that great. How do you know? Have you read my book? No, but you're not a traditionally published author. You're lost. I'm sorry. Get over yourself. So, but things are changing, and we as indies have earned a respect. How do you feel? Are you enjoying it? Are you having fun with it? Because you are in control.
Yes, and for me, I mean, when you realize that I'm an eccentric, I have all these hobbies, and I'm a really creative person, and always been. The creative control is wonderful. When I have characters, and my work is all character-centered, so it really revolves around them. There's a certain story that I have to tell, and I knew if I would go through a publishing house, things could kind of get changed around. A lot of times they want an emphasis on a different point of the plot. So you really don't have the creative control, and even if you get an agent in a publishing contract, they can still drop your book. So
quick,
it's not 100%.
Yes. Not only can they drop your book, but like you say, they can take that story, and once it gets to the editors, they can rewrite it any way they want to. From their perspective, they control the cover, they control the marketing, and on top of that, you don't get but 8 cents a book.
Absolutely, yes. So there is all this extra marketing, but I mean, you don't know how much your book is going to make because you have all of this overhead, and you have a publisher too. So
exactly.
You are definitely doing more work with creative control, but there's no guarantee that your book's going to see success, even the publishing contract. So that's kind of, I think that's very interesting. Yeah.
And like you, I'm eccentric, and I'm also a control freak. I don't want somebody telling me what's in my book. It's my book. It's my dream. It's my story. I wrote it. You go write your own. Leave mine alone.
I agree. I am. I like to be very organized. I'll put it that way.
Yes. I mean, I don't mind my editor saying, Yvonne, you've done it again, because I'm dyslexic and I misspell words because I reverse them. And sometimes I think I've written something that my mind says that I wrote, my eyes say that I wrote. But when my editor reads it, she says, Yvonne, did you mean this sentence? Let me read this back to you. And I said, that's not what I wrote. She said, oh, yeah, it is. I fixed it. But it's not, Yvonne, I'm going to rewrite your book for you. It's, did you really mean to say this? If you did, okay, but you might want to rethink this. Yeah, you're right. B is not spelled T-E-H, it's spelled T-H-E. But I am strange like that. So let's talk about... Yes, ladies and gentlemen, we're going to talk about the book, so just chill out a minute. Why did you decide to name your series The Supernatural London Underground?
It is a very long title, and I've come to realize that all of my titles will probably be very long, and that's just how it is. But I did want to encompass that it takes place in London, especially in urban fantasy. The city is basically like a character, so there's a lot going on in it, and especially in the city that I write, in the London aspect of everything. So I wanted something that just said what the series is about. So if you like the supernatural, you like London, it's pretty true to the urban fantasy genre. And it just spells it all out. So it's right there.
So what age group, how far down age-wise might be interested in this?
I think that it's young adult, two adults. Definitely the main character is 19 years old, and the people that she meets and her friends are in their early 20s. So I would say that is probably the best age range. For readers of the book, and it is pretty dark too. So if you have a sense of humor, that's great. That'll help you out in the series a lot, because there is humor in it, but it is dark. So you have to be willing to, I guess, embrace the darkness. But then there's a lot of humor that offsets it too. So I think it's a good balance of both, and young adults and adults alike have enjoyed reading it. So I'm really excited about that.
I see, now you have me at embrace the darkness. Because if you've seen some of my books, I embrace more than the darkness. So you had me embrace the darkness. I am going to read, ladies and gentlemen. No, and you can't go buy this book until we're through with the show, because you'll miss something. I'm going to read the synopsis of book one, because I found it very interesting. And rather than try to break the synopsis down and then talk about it, I want to read the synopsis and then talk about it, because you've crammed a lot of information in this thing, and I said, oh, I got to go buy this book. Okay, ladies and gentlemen, book one of the series, A Mirror Among Shattered Glass. Now, that sounds almost like an oxymoron until you get into it, and it goes something like this. Unable to contain the deadly nature of her family's secret and powers, 19-year-old Ramirez Dimitri hails from California, USA, to unearth her heritage as a descendant of serial killer. Are y'all ready for this, ladies and gentlemen? Countess Bathory. Now, if you don't know who she is, go look her up later, not now. The woman that lent Dracula his legend and cursed Ramirez an appetite for blood. Unenthusiastic about relocating to her birth city of London, a charming paranormal investigator with claim to the throne could change her mind as he leads her to the only living and distant relative she has, a raven-haired recluse named Talia, who has taken refuge in an old castle in the heart of the city and doesn't seem to have a heart of her own. After a rough introduction to the lethal, inappropriate, and enchantingly sarcastic people she calls her housemates, perhaps the other misfits will be her first true friends. However, As much as these people are like her, they still have hidden vendettas, a taste for revenge, and will struggle between what is just, what will settle their psychological upheaval. There is only one way for Romarian to become part of the supernatural London underground. Will she be the one who challenges them to put down their ghosts and demons and make their world together? Okay, you had me at Countess Barati. Bathory. I can't talk tonight. I told you I have this problem with getting my words out. Anyway, I have watched her.
Our brains are too fast.
Yeah, that's what it is. I have studied her for years and years and years and years. What in the world, child, made you put her in your story? It's an amazing concept.
Oh, thank you. This is what happens around Halloween when I watch television. I don't really have cable anymore, but usually I would watch it around Halloween because I loved all of the dark stories, and Halloween is still one of my favorite holidays. And I was watching an episode of Scariest Places on Earth, and they went into one of Countess Bathory's castles. Now, mine is in London when she was Hungarian. That's creative license, so I get to really continue this legend and all of the horrible things that they say she did. She didn't even speak at her own trial, so they wouldn't let her. So we don't know for sure. Obviously, there are witnesses who said that she tortured and killed hundreds of servant girls at her castle. But we've never really had her story of it. So there are a lot of great books and a lot of great fiction on her because she was the very first female serial killer that we can look back at and come up with, I mean, in the 1500s. So I thought the myth about, of course, whenever you see a woman bathing in blood, that's Bathory. So we don't think that she actually did it. There aren't any accounts in the trials, in the court hearings, which I read, that say that she bathed in blood. One of the other legends was that she fed her infant children blood, and that really creeped me out. So when something really moves me in that way, even if it's really dark and creepy, I like to think on it, and that's how the story and the powers for the main character came into existence. So all from me watching this history and these people trying to figure out if his castle was haunted because of such a dark history. And Bathory was so, she was just so powerful, and she was rich. She was richer than the Hungarian government. She was richer than her husband at the time, and it's speculated that she was a really good mother to her children. So you have a woman with a lot of conflicting traits, with kind of this darkness running through every story that you hear about her.
Well, true serial killers, and that's my specialty, that's what I studied in college when I got my degree, true serial killers are, quote-unquote, live a normal lifestyle most of the time, and which apparently is what she did to all outward appearances. She was a good mother. She was high in the upper echelon of the society, and she was worshipped from afar, probably, and well-respected. And in the meantime, she's slaying servant girls because it gave her power.
I find that so interesting. Oh, yeah, that is so fair. And I'm happy to talk to you, too, because I was serial killers are a big interest of mine because I don't understand how that could happen or somebody could do that. And I want to try to understand, and I know I'll never experience that. So it's kind of, it's interesting to study. And this is me coming from a psychology background. So that's really what it is.
But they are interesting because there is a psychology to them, but it's their own psychology because every serial killer profiles differently, kills differently, and justifies their actions differently. And it would be, what would be interesting would be to get into her mind if there was some record somewhere other than the transcripts of the trial where she didn't speak, and study her psychology of what she was thinking when she did what she did.
Absolutely. I think it was speculated, and I mean, we can't say for sure because we didn't have the same criteria we do now as they
right.
did back then, but they thought that she might have been, or she might have had epilepsy was one of the things, so epileptic seizures and things like that, or she might have been schizophrenic. And we don't know. I mean, that's all speculation. But to have her account would have been amazing, and there were a lot of fiction books that follow her or give her account. And I think those are very interesting. And those authors put a lot of creative thought into them.
And I bet you had a ball doing your research on her because you had to do a lot of research to get her background right in order to set your story and set your character in her lineage. Would that be a fair statement?
Absolutely. I read a lot, as writers do. And it was very interesting to get the different accounts. I think The Blood Countess was one of the books that I had to read through. One of my friends who reads the series borrowed it from me, so she got to read it. So it's very unsettling to hear about everything she did. And at the same time, I mean, it's fascinating to be set in history in that particular point of time as well.
So that brings me full circle to your main character, who is kin to this woman in this story.
Yes.
How did you build her without giving away the story? Because we won't, no, y'all cannot go order the book now. You're just going to have to hold your horses. How did you build your character to fit in that lineage and at some point she would have to come to terms with, yeah, I'm a descendant of a serial killer. And help her overcome that, because that would be like you and I go back into our genealogy and find out that we're related to Attila the Hun or something and having to come to terms with, oh, God, I'm descended from Attila the Hun. Am I going to be as insane as he was? Was it hard to build her into that character with all of her flaws and strengths?
I think a really interesting factor that I love about psychology is resilience. So she's going to have to uncover her past, and she's going to have the strength to become who she wants to be, especially since this is a supernatural book. It's paranormal, and she has powers that go along with this lineage. She really has to look into it and decide who she wants to be. And I think that if you acknowledge what's going on in your own life, there's always a choice. You can turn everything around. So in that aspect, she was really fun to write. She was raised in America, so she was from California. And then really her last effort to try and figure out what's wrong with her and how to get rid of these powers that she has in this really strange ability is to go uncover her past. So at the beginning, she doesn't know that she's a descendant of Countess Bathory, and she has to uncover this and decide who she wants to be and where she's going from here and who she can trust with her secrets.
So see, ladies and gentlemen, even in fiction, we're storytellers. That's what we do. We tell a good story. But even in fiction, there's always something we can learn, and we talked about this a little bit last night with the guest that I had, and he kept saying, I just want to tell a good story. I'm not trying to set a precedent or try to teach something. But that being said, we can't help ourselves. We always wind up putting that back within ourselves as teaching something. And you were right. In order to figure out who we are and how we come to terms with ourselves, we have to do what your character did and go back to the beginning. And I love it. I can't wait to get into it. Goodbye, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to go get my book now. No kidding. So I'm going to ask you, there is a cliffhanger on this book, right? Because the series continues.
The series continues. So I think the first book, you want to know what happens next, so it doesn't leave with a very sharp cliff as the next two in the series do, because the first book is really about her coming to terms with her past and getting to know these reluctant misfits that she stumbled across. So I think definitely, I mean, the main story arc is about her coming into her own and trying to trust people with a secret and realizing that she's not alone. So it doesn't leave on a horrible cliffhanger, but I wanted to know what happened next, so I wrote the other two.
The next one is the Frost Bloom Garden, right? That's the second one?
Yeah, that's my favorite one of the series so far.
Why?
I think it has a lot more action elements. I always joke and say in the first book, Roman, her life is only in peril about 3 times. And then in the second one, she gets farther into the London Underground. So she's chasing after a serial killer for this company that's run by that recluse that is in the book blurb for the first book. And she also ends up visiting a parallel world. So you have the urban fantasy where people are running through the city at night trying to catch a killer and trying not to lose their lives in the process. And then you have the really good fantasy element of an alternate world. And a lot of good philosophical questions are posed in between for both. So I think that's definitely why it's my favorite one, because there's so much happening in it.
Will it make me dizzy when I read it?
No, it goes through. I think it goes through thoroughly. The second book's always a challenge because you want to go through what happened in the first book without being too redundant, and I think that I nailed that. So it doesn't get annoyingly redundant at any point, and you kind of see it through fresh eyes, but if you haven't picked up the first book in a while, the second one you don't is great, so you're not going to get too lost, and you don't get that confused.
Then you go to the third one, Warriors of the Wicked.
Yes, that is
where
the third one.
This...
It's Wandings of the Wicked.
Where does, yeah, see, I can't even read my own writing. This is
it's
bad.
It's an old archaic
bad.
Word. It's okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, I'm sorry. It's been that kind of day. I'm running on zero sleep. My husband didn't sleep at all last night, so I'm sort of looking cross-eyed at things now. But that's
great.
Yeah. Oh, thank you. You're too kind. So explain this one. Explain this word. It's an archaic word that is never used anymore. Why did you choose it, and how does it play into the book, and where does this third one take us?
I love Merriam-Webster word of the day. It's always fantastic, especially
mm-hmm.
for writers. And Wanin was an old archaic word. It reminds me of one of the characters, Talia, who's a little bit different. And it's basically another word for an oath or a promise. So there are a lot of things, and I do use third-person chapters to get you into the heads of the other characters. So the supporting characters aren't just supporting characters. They definitely come with their own sets of sometimes very vibrant personality. And they're all coming to terms with something. So a wanting is definitely, it's an oath, it's a wish, a promise. It's even a vendetta. So you'll see a lot of characters really act out things that they've been struggling with for a long time. So we're seeing so much growth in this third book. And it's definitely very dark, but it still has a lot of the great elements of humor. Of course, sarcasm is never far from these characters, but we get to see them change a lot, as everybody does in their life and as they grow up.
So how many books are you going to put in this series? Do you know yet? Has she told you yet? Are you going to do spinoffs? Could this go on from now until Armageddon?
So Armageddon, yeah. I mean, you have a lot of immortal people, so this can just go on forever. I better get writing.
Yes.
It'll be
especially
books.
Since you're coming back on the show.
I'll be back for eternity. So it'll be 6 books. I like to call it a hexology. I don't want to drag it out too long. And then I have 10 books in a different series planned after that. So I have a lot of plans going on. But I'm really excited because I get to be with the characters from the Supernatural London Underground for about 4 years over this series, and a lot of things are going to happen, and there'll be a lot of changes, and that's what I want from characters. I want to see growth when I read. I want to really relate to them. And I know, I mean, these people come from my imagination, but I know them so well that they're a part of me. And I have a lot of readers who like certain characters and don't know why, and are really enjoying being friends with these characters that we get to be with for six books.
That is the truth, because it's Anne Rice is one of my favorite authors, has been since the 1990s. I have read everything she's written, even some of her erotica, which I was not fond of. But that being said, the Witch series and the Vampire series, and I couldn't wait till the next book came out, because, like you said, those characters grew and morphed, and you watch them as they grow and morph and either become better or worse people, depending on whether or not they get killed off. And you can't wait to see what they're going to do next. So now, I haven't even read the first book yet, and you've got me hooked. So, yeah, you better get writing, because you got three more in this series, and I might be dead before you get finished, and then I'm going to come back and haunt you.
Oh, my gosh. I will hurry as best I can, or I'll leave it out in my spare room so you can read it next to my doll.
There you go.
Together.
Together we'll read the book. She'll be pulling her hat off, and I'll be whispering, "Where is it? Where's the book? I need the book."
Oh, come by anytime.
When you started this Underground series, and after watching about the Countess, did you have an idea of where you wanted to set the series, or was it something that morphed the more you studied the Countess?
I would say it morphed a little bit, and especially as I got further into psychology, too, and I rounded everything out, that there were a few surprises along the way. So I knew my main story arcs and what would happen. I will tell you that it was originally going to be three books. So when you read the end of the third one, you'll be like, "What were you thinking?" And a lot of people are mad that, I mean, that one's a big cliffhanger. But I decided to write the other three for the readers and for myself, will end it up. So the Countess definitely played a big role throughout all of these books, and it's always going to be in the back of the main character's mind. Am I going to end up this way? Are there other people out there like me who aren't as good as I am necessarily, if you can really quantify good, or describe it in any way. So I think it's always going to be in the background of her mind. The Countess is kind of lingering there.
Do you think you'll ever take her to the home place of the Countess?
Oh, that's a good question. She hasn't been there in the series yet. Other characters have been there. As odd as that sounds, it'll make sense when you get to that point. But as for now, the closest thing that she has is this fictional castle that I've set up in the heart of London. It's really modeled after the Tower of London, which is my favorite place as a tourist. So she does still feel a big connection to the Countess living in the castle, and meeting relatives that might just share the same blood that she has. So there is a sense of familiarity. I think it would be awesome if she went to Hungary to experience everything. So now you've got me thinking even more, which is great because I'm an author, so I love that.
I'm bad about that. I throw those things out because that's how my mind works. Because in my genealogy searches, I'm always thinking, why can't I just step back in time, or just go to that place and talk to that person, or get the feel of where they lived and died and carried on their life, because I would feel something closer or something different. I would feel more connected. So getting her to Hungary, that might persuade her one way or the other in her attitude about who she is.
Yes, and she'll definitely uncover her biological parents. So she was adopted, and she lives in the States at the beginning of the book and relocates. But I promise you will find out who both of her parents are. There's this lovely questionable parentage thing that we do in urban fantasy all the time, because it's really, it's such a sense of excitement for these younger characters to figure out who they are. So she'll build a connection with both of her parents and learn a little bit about their story, which I think is fantastic for her to learn about where she comes from. I mean, even though she's in a great environment with wonderful parents, she's always going to wonder.
And that is true in real life. Children that are adopted at some point want that connection. It's as normal as breathing. There is a energy that child has to have with their birth parents.
Yes, I agree. I've definitely seen it. I've had friends who are adopted, and they've been lucky enough to connect with their parents, and it's such a powerful thing, especially when they're a friend that you've known for so long, that it's so inspiring. And it's just, it's wonderful to see that, and it's even more wonderful when it goes well with the parent and the child can understand a little bit.
Well, you're not going to believe this, but our hour is almost up, my dear.
Wow, and that flew by.
It always does. So before they kick us off here and before people get all antsy and their fingers won't stop trying to go to the keyboard, tell everybody where you can be found, because you have a phenomenal website. And
thank
I want people
you.
To yes, it's I love it. And anybody that's got a thought of going to London, you will want to go to this website, I'm telling you. So tell them where they can find you, sweetheart.
I am at romerandimitri.com, so it is just my author name at a .com. And you can find my main website there. I'm all over social media, so I have Wi-Fi in pretty much any place that you can find me. And I like to connect with readers, and I can do that as an indie, so it's really great to be out there and meeting readers and other authors. So feel free to reach out and come find me. My books are on Amazon, Barnes & Noble right now. So they're in those two mediums. And I always welcome new friends on social media and new connections, which is the best part about being an indie author.
Absolutely. And, yes, ladies and gentlemen, she will be coming back because we're not done with her yet. Trust me, we didn't even touch on our common interest of the supernatural and the visits that we've had, and yeah, she'll be back. Now, if someone comes to you, and I ask every one of my guests this because I think that our audience needs to understand the world is made up of dreamers. If we didn't have dreamers, we wouldn't have technology, we wouldn't have telephones, we wouldn't go to the moon, we wouldn't even have the printed word. So when someone comes to you and says, Roman, I have this dream and I want to do X, Y, Z, but what would you tell them?
I would tell them, if you love what you're doing, you have to do it. Make sure that you do your research so you know what you're getting yourself into and fully understand the industry. And then the third thing would be to take every piece of criticism that you get and make it something positive.
That is very true, because this can be a brutal business, ladies and gentlemen. I'm going to tell you, it can be very brutal. And if you don't develop a thick skin, or if in any dream that you have, because there's always going to be haters. And the reason there's always going to be haters is because there's always going to be somebody out there who is frustrated and for whatever reason has allowed someone else to destroy their dream. So, as they say, misery loves company. So they're going to try to steal your dream and destroy it. And you all know, you've listened to me long enough to understand that no one can destroy your dream without your permission. And if you give them permission.
That's great.
Yeah, feel free to use it, because I stole it from Mamie Eisenhower.
Uh-huh.
So if someone steals your dream and then at the end of your day someone says, well, do you have any regrets? Don't be that person. Because why would you want to be that person? you've got right now, that's all we have. That's all we're promised. And if mm-hmm. there's something that you really want to do, and it's like I've said before, if you want to be a garbage collector, your child wants to be a garbage collector, live that dream. There's nothing wrong with that. If you want to create another Picasso-like painting, do it. It's from within you. It doesn't matter what the rest of the world thinks. If it's a passion that you have that you absolutely cannot stop doing, as long as it's not illegal or immoral, do it. Am I right?
I agree. And you have to do what you love.
Yes. Oh, my goodness. Yeah, you have to. I mean, you have to follow your passion, or else you'll always be wondering what if. Don't be the what
exactly.
if person that makes you happy. And, of course, if it doesn't hurt anybody else, you should go for it and learn about it. And don't let that stop you. There's no reason that you should give up on your dreams. You can make it happen.
And if your dream changes, that's okay, too. Because let me tell you, ladies and gentlemen, writing has been my passion since I was old enough to pick up a pencil and write my name. That's all I ever wanted to do. But in the course of my lifetime, I have accomplished other dreams. My designs on Vita was not one of my dreams, but it fell in my lap, so I took it and ran with it. The radio show was a dream. Writing is a dream. And I make those dreams happen. Because I'm not going to be that person. Roman's not going to be that person. She's going to write until Armageddon because she knows that she's got to finish this series. Because if something happens to me, I'm going to sit next to her doll and haunt her.
When you know
that
you
kind
need
of girl.
To do something, yeah, that's a sign that you have to do it. When you know that you can't live without writing, don't quit doing it. You're just going to drive yourself crazy. So go take it as far as you can.
And you're going to be angry all the time because you've got this need and this desire, and you feel frustrated. So, ladies and gentlemen, don't. Oh, and another thing that I preach: don't have negative in your life. Negative people in your life, cut them out like dead wood, because they will only bring you down. They don't want you to bring them up. They want to bring you down. So keep the negative people out of your life. If someone doesn't want to support you, kick them to the curb. You don't need them. There's too many of us out there that love the support. Am I right?
Absolutely. The sooner you realize that, the better it's going to be. And you really, if you build each other up, that helps, even with other authors. We don't put each other down. We want to help each other and build each other up, because if one of us succeeds, the frame of mind that you're going to have, if you want to be a success, helping others is going to help you, and being negative and bringing other people down is not going to. Nobody benefits from that.
And see, this is another reason I love this girl, because she's a woman after my own heart. We only are as successful as we help others to be. And with that being said, tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time, author Nick Carey will be here. Y'all come, learn, join us, learn things. On Saturday night, my friend and fellow radio host Chris Plain is going to be here, and I have no idea what's going to happen on that show. I never know with this boy. You never know. Anything can happen, it usually does. Roman, thank you, my dear sweet one, for spending an hour with me. It flew by. It was a hoot, and I loved every second of it, and I mean that from my heart.
Thank you. Me too. I could talk forever, so thank you for having me on for this hour. It was so much fun.
You're going to come back so we can talk some more. That'll be so exciting. Get ready.
Yes.
You've got to have some more juicy gossip for the characters of the story.
I will.
So ladies and gentlemen, understand this. You know what I say. If you can believe it, you can dream it, you can achieve it. Support your children in their dreams. Support your spouse, your friend, your mother, your father, your cousin, your aunt, your uncle. Support a stranger, because none of us get out alive. And join us tomorrow night at 8 o'clock Eastern Standard Time with author Nick Carey, because you never know what's going to happen off the chain. Some nights I can talk with my tongue straight. Some nights I can, and I get my words twisted, and it just happens. So until tomorrow night, this is Yvonne Mason with Off the Chain, and we say good night.
Good night.
Okay, hold on a minute. All right, now then, we're off the air, but we're going into archive. Now, what's going to happen is when we hang up, the show will upload into archives.
Mm-hmm.
As soon as it uploads, I will put the link on my Facebook page, and I'm going to tag you in it. You take
right.
that show and post it everywhere. Put it on your on all, both your pages. Put it on your website. Put it everywhere you want to put. This is my gift to you, my darling. And
that is
then,
fantastic, thank you.
You're welcome. Well, it gets better than that. It goes up to five podcasts. Tomorrow I will put the show up on five podcasts. When they go up on those podcasts, I will put it on the Facebook page and I will tag you in it. It will go up on
okay.
Spreaker, SoundCloud, MixCloud, Podcast.com, Podcast Garden. And from those shows and from this show, it then goes up to iTunes, FM.com, TuneIn Radio, and Stitcher.
Oh, wow, that's a lot of places.
That's why we're heard in 50-plus countries. And what happens is when I put the show up in the taglines, I put my guest, interview, books, whatever I can bring back to them. But my guest name is always in that tagline. So if you pull up Ramir and Dimitri, you're going to see all these shows with your name on it.
Oh, yay!
So you're going to be out there even more than you are now.
Oh, thank you, thank you. I had so much fun, too. It felt like it was only, like, 7 minutes that we spent talking.
It does that. It you know, we say hello, we do the introduction, and then boom, the hour's gone. So I've got you down for September, October. October would be perfect because that's my favorite time of the month because it's Halloween, which is my favorite time of the year.
Me too.
So if I don't get you in September, I'll do you October. So let's have some good things to talk about in October.
All right, we absolutely will.
The things that go bump in the night and how far you are on the fourth book in the series.
Yay!
Thank you, my darling. I appreciate you coming on so much. It was so much fun. I told my husband tonight,
thank
I said, I've had a lot of excited guests, but I've never had one so excited as you were to come on this show.
Oh, thanks. I'm so excitable. So I love life and I love to experience everything that I can. Especially, I mean, you're helping so many people reach new audiences. And like I said, when we help each other, it helps everybody. So it's that positivity and that energy. And I'm happy to be a part of that. So you have great energy.
I try. Some days I go, okay, fake it till you make it, Yvonne. Just fake it till you make it. Okay, I've got this.
Yeah. That's the mindset.
Yeah, absolutely, because, you know, nobody wants a Downy Debbie. Those are a dime a dozen.
No.
So
Those are.
I will get this up. I will, as soon as it uploads, I'll put up a tag you in it, and you start reposting it. Because, see, what happens is people can go in and listen to it, and every day I pull up numbers, and each show has its own number for the day, and every day everybody's number climb as to the listening, the listeners. And that happens on all my other podcasts, too. So you may be hit with a whole barrage of new people and book sales, and you're going, but what happened? And then it'll dawn on you, oh. The radio show. Because, see, we're hurrying in places like the Russian Federation, Italy, England, Guyana, the Republic of the Congo, some country I can't even pronounce. It's 10 miles long. Norway, of course, Australia, Canada, New Zealand. Let's see, where else? The Bahamas. Bermuda, places I didn't even know existed. So we're heard all over the world.
That is amazing. I love being able to reach different places because even 10 years ago, I don't think we'd even be able to. So it's,
no.
So it's, there's so much out there, too. The world is so big.
And y'all get all this beautiful exposure, and I get to see y'all just blossom. It just tickles me to death. It makes me happy.
Yay, thank you. It makes me happy, too.
All right, darling. Well, let me get in here and get this thing uploaded, and we will stay in touch and get you booked for October.
All righty. Sounds fantastic. Have a wonderful night.
You too, sweetheart. Talk to you later.
All right. Bye.
Bye-bye.